knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you, buddy. What's your bright spot?
Ooh, that was
that wasn't our best execution.
No, rhythm was terrible.
No, that was off.
Were you
what
still
happened?
Trying to come up with memories of Hey Dude?
No, honestly, I was thinking about ways to keep water from getting into your windows.
Yeah, there's.
I had an idea.
We're recording this in the afternoon in Chicago after a massive. Rainstorm, a lot of flash flooding and what have you.
Oh, yeah.
And right when you showed up to record, yes. I discovered that there was a grotto forming in the middle of my living room.
Yeah.
There was a little, I had a hot tub now.
Yeah.
And there were globalists in it. And I didn't know what to do.
There were things laying eggs. There was a biodiverse ecosystem being built around this oasis in your home.
Yeah. I had no idea that somehow there was a leak or something. And like, it was just a nightmare.
Mm.
And so hopefully that's the only one in the house.
Yeah. We'll see.
Great. So that's fun. That's not my bright spot.
Yeah, no. That's not your bright spot. What is your bright spot today, buddy?
My bright spot is it is officially today the end of the dreamy, creamy summer.
That's true.
And I will be crossing the 100 ice creams later this evening. I've not had it yet, but I started the day off with a frosty chino from Wendy's.
What?
It's a
it's a frosty and a cappuccino?
Well, no, it's like a coffee, but then like the cream is frosty. They're frosty ice cream.
That was an idea that took 5 minutes.
Yep. And thank God. No need to rework that thing at all. Fantastic. 9 out of 10.
I love that.
Yeah, it's good.
That was some enterprising employee 20 years ago who's just like, hey, buddy, I got an idea. I'm just going to put some Frosty in your drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to end things with one of the suggestions that you actually had that I have not taken you up on yet, and that is the Insomnia Cookie, I believe.
Cloud Cookie.
The ice cream sandwich. That you said was too much.
It's going to blow your head off.
Yeah, so I'm going to finish things off this evening with that.
Excellent.
Cap off the dreamy, creamy summer.
Perfect.
Woo, man, a lot of ice creams.
Yeah. 100 is a lot. I like that you got 99 on the morning of. That's a good.
I might have had a number of things that I had already had, padding the stats a little bit.
Listen. What's the difference between a rebound with 5 seconds left to go in the game and a rebound with 20 minutes left to go?
It all goes on the board.
It's all going on there, right, man. It's all in the stat sheet.
And I think there's some lessons that I've learned that I'd like to impart on the audience. classics are classics for a reason.
Yeah, that's
true. There's some things that you think, like your basic ass 7-Eleven or grocery store ice cream sandwich.
Sure.
Comes in the white wrapper.
Yep.
Good.
Never, since you were 3 years old, mm-hmm. You've eaten one. You don't know who makes those.
There's something to it, and don't scoff.
No.
There's a reason that those are still in business.
Yep.
It's because they're fantastic.
Second
thing, don't get too weird. Frosties, on the subject of Frosties.
Uh-huh.
When I was growing up, there was a chocolate Frosty.
Sure.
And that was it.
Right.
Now there's a vanilla Frosty. There's a strawberry Frosty.
It took them a lot longer to get to vanilla than it really should have.
True.
Yeah.
They're not worth it. Chocolate Frosty is great.
It's
it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And McDonald's. They have a McFlurry. M&M and Oreo.
Right.
They've tried to branch out, and every time it has been a whiff. Don't do it.
Yeah, it
McDonald's.
Hasn't gone well.
Stick to the safe ocean.
They can put Oreos and they can put Reese's in there. But they don't put Reese's. They put, like, the Reese's pieces, and those are just... can't put those in ice cream.
I think that McDonald's doesn't have a deal with Reese's.
I think that could be an issue.
I think Reese's hates Ray Kroc or something, and they just they won't give him rights.
Man, Reese and McDonald had a fight. Mm-hmm. 400, yeah.
I also think that things like a Dairy Queen, like a Blizzard and stuff, it's fine.
Peanut Buster Parfait, I think, was...
I didn't have one of those.
I haven't had one in years, but I remember the ice cream, the peanuts, the fudge, and then the ice cream, the peanuts, the fudge. The triple layer or whatever, amazing.
It might be great for a child. I worked at Dairy Queen when I was younger, and I have terrible memories of... Making dilly bars and what have you. And I don't want to open that can of worms
that
back
makes
up.
Sense. Yeah.
But yeah, they're good. They're fine. But, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Other things, custard superior to frozen yogurt.
Yeah. True.
For sure.
Yep.
Some of these fucking overpriced ass ice cream pints are so overrated.
Yeah.
They have no business charging as much as they do.
Those parfait ones, those are a scam. There's like this much ice cream in them, and then, no, that's bullshit.
And, are you talking about those ones that are like the sundae cup
things?
Yes,
yeah.
And they are disgusting.
Yeah.
There's too much
universal
shit in them.
Gross, yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. Big loser of the bracket, for sure, even though it wasn't a bracket.
Yes.
The Bunny Tracks by Blue Bunny.
Oh.
They make a bar, like on a stick.
Yeah. Never heard of it.
It's too much.
Too much.
Too much. It's busy. There's like a stripe of fudge in it. There's peanuts. There's rabbit-shaped caramel-filled chocolate things in it.
Like,
no. I don't know what I'm eating. Yeah. So we'll see how this ice cream sandwich closes things out, but I'm excited for it. And, buttons are going out periodically. They're going out sporadically. Even though the Dreamy Creamy Summer has ended, this will go on for the next couple months or so. People will be getting buttons because I woefully underestimated. I underestimated the demand last time, and I thought that'll be about the same. No. Thousands of buttons going
out.
Big
difference.
I have had to enlist the help of a business.
Yeah.
Quite frankly. I physically...
For the first time ever, we have enlisted a business.
I physically can't make this many buttons.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to outsource it. So there are some folks who have been curious about, like, hey, I haven't gotten my button yet, but some people are posting pictures. It's because they're going first come, first serve, basically, in the email inbox.
Yep.
Even though the Dreamy Creamy Summer's over, I'm going to keep these fundraisers on the GoFundMe open until we're done sending out the buttons. So if people care to chip in and support these great causes, there's a link.
Please
on
do.
This is enough of my bright spot. Yeah. What's yours?
My bright spot today, Dan, is there's a new show called Bee and Puppy Cat. I know. It's made by some of the people who made Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not, it's more like that surreal, uncanny, point of view on, a certain, like, almost magical girl, like Sailor Moon kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine,
it's a bee?
More like it's a modern woman trying to deal with shit and then stuff goes crazy. You know?
Okay.
And that's kind of... But then also, it's so very mundane at the same time that it balances things out with a almost non-existent chiptune soundtrack. It's really, really interesting and good. I don't know if I would recommend it to anybody.
The mundanity, is it like bills?
Yes.
Bills are piling up and then you have to have superpowers
totally. Take odd jobs.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, if she achieves her goal... She gets like $50, like with magical powers, all of this shit going on. One time she gets paid in change, you know, like it is a tough life out there for an intergalactic superhero of sorts.
Is she a bee?
No, she is not a bee. She's just a regular old gal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll not check it out, but it does sound interesting and I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's enjoyable.
So Jordan, today we have an episode to go over and we're going back to the past because I have been dealing with some stuff and I want to have a little treat. And I always find going back to the past to be a treat.
Much better.
And like Alex is off on Monday. doing his Andrew Tate interview is going to air.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And, you know, he's half out the door as is. Sure. Talked to Bannon on Friday.
Oh, okay.
Shit.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the past called me. It beckoned. And we'll talk about that. But here, before we get into any of this business, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, Jill L., thank you so much. You are now Policy Wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
This person said that the name is supposed to be pronounced like it was in The Witcher, and I have not watched The Witcher, and I played The Witcher 3, but it was on mute, so I had subtitles, and so I didn't. I don't know how anybody pronounces anything, so as best I can tell, it's Brandylion. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
I want it to be Brendelian of some sort, you know?
Maybe
that
is.
I don't really remember that. Anyway, thank you very much.
You might be right.
Yep.
Next, Jason, watch Neon Genesis Evangelion. Love, Madison. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
You're smiling.
Yeah, that's Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh, sorry.
No. Do not apologize. But it's an anime.
I guess that. I think I've heard someone mention it before.
Yeah. So it's an anime about forcing these children to pilot giant organic robots to defeat the existence of separation between consciousness.
So child soldiers with a real, like, hard psych.
And they don't shy away from the child in Child Soldier. They torture that kid. I mean, boy, there's memes about just get in the robot. If you hear somebody say, like, get in the robot towards that meme, it buries decades of torture.
I liked easy kind of, like, not that heavy kind of entertainment, and that's why I listen to Alex Jones all the time.
I'm gonna take a pass
on this.
No. The last four episodes are live action surreal adventure nonsense.
Yeah. Next, Daniel Jordan's Dreamy Creamy Space Hash. Thank you so much. You're an Iowa Policy Wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Sophia in Scotland. Thank you so much. You're an Iowa Policy Wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Also might be Sophia. And we got a technocrat up in the mix here, Jordan. So my InfoWars-obsessed coworker has started buying pills and shirts from Alex, so I'm becoming a technocrat to bring balance to the fight. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent. He's a loser little titty baby. I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Now, Jordan.
Yeah.
We left off on August 6th, 2003.
Right.
The last time we were in the past. And so we picked up there and listened to the 7th, and it's just, man, it is...
Desert.
Yeah. That is to a T.
Ugh.
He ends up having a little bit of a round table with a couple pastors who are complaining about how, like, they're trying to run a scam where they give teachers credentials, but they aren't licensed to do it. And they're like, why is everyone so mad at us?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So it's kind of a snooze, and I had to skip past it.
Round table with pastors is never fun.
Right. So we get to Friday, August 8th, and there's actually something that I found really fascinating, and I think this is an incredibly helpful, teachable episode about Alex and how he operates.
Okay.
And the story that he tells has to do with the Child Protective Services.
Sure.
And his feelings surrounding it. Obviously, he thinks that they're just out to kidnap your children.
Yeah. We've interacted with the imaginary CPS in the past.
Yes. And so he starts off the episode talking about this.
There are over a million and a half children taken each year by federally funded child kidnapping services.
That can't be true.
And the argument is, well, you know, there are abusers out there. Yeah, you have criminal laws for that. You have police for that. And in the past, it was the churches and or private county organizations that handled it. And there were still a lot of problems with orphanages and abuse there as well. Because statistically, governments and agencies and orphanages, public or private, abuse kids more than parents, statistically. So it's kind of a catch-22. You take kids from abusers and give them to people, statistically, that have an even bigger penchant for abuse, where criminals of all types are attracted because they can then abuse people who are defenseless. And that's just the, you know, go get a master's degree in criminology, and you'll find out all about it, okay?
You go get a master's degree in criminology.
It's the crime.
He has two
statistics, folks.
You don't get to tell
so
me to do that.
It's blown right there. But I have to tell you, I mean, if you're the daughter or son of a crack dealer, you don't have a problem, folks. They don't want you. But if you're middle class, if don't know your rights, they will get in a year $200,000 of federal funds if they can string your toddler out on Ritalin, Prozac. Oh yeah, this is admitted.
So this is something. He's a lot of this is pretty standard stuff.
Yeah.
From Alex's point.
Sure.
Something that needs to be brought up too is this notion that the Child Protective Services doesn't need to exist because there are criminal laws for this.
Yeah.
Is a little bit of a weird perspective to
have. No, the cops will come steal a kid and then they'll raise them in the precinct and that's where we get cops.
Sure. I think that sounds like a fun
great,
anime.
That sounds like a
that you might watch. I think it's silly to act like this because there are laws and there are people who need to be specialized in dealing with certain laws, particularly sensitive type situations like family dynamics and abuse. That's not something that you would want to entrust to your normal beat cop or just someone who doesn't have some training in that field.
Of course. So if you don't have CPS, then you just have to take a unit inside the police department and turn them into CPS.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what you do for someone to accomplish the job you're looking for,
right,
someone has to be there.
Or you have to create a situation where, like, we don't do anything proactive. We don't do anything that is trying to, you know, address situations. And instead, what we do is when there's something, when we get a murmur of like there's some abuse going on, we send in just your normal detective in there, and I guess they arrest the parents and the kids can fend for themselves.
I mean, it does feel like what they're doing is, okay, so your parents are gonna go to jail. You're gonna be fine in this house by yourself.
All you right, good,
cool, we'll see you later. We'll check in on you once a week or so. We'll bring you some food.
I don't know what the alternative for what Alex is. I guess it's just that the churches will take care of everything. It's kind of the same thing he has about like people not having insurance.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, doctors at churches will take care of you. Charities will do it.
Community aid.
That's great.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff it would be great if there was more of it, but relying on it institutionally and structurally seems like it's just way to not
you know,
pay taxes.
We created a government because we wanted community aid on a bigger level.
Right.
That's why we all pay the government to then provide community aid.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
So Alex has a story about the CPS taking a child, and I do not believe that this is true.
I've been to the hospitals, okay, where the mother's had a newborn baby, no criminal record, and got some welfare, you know, was recommended with her first baby. Oh, come to the city hospital. It'll be paid for. You know, oh, I'll get some help. Come in, sign here, take the kid. You're at risk because you're both, you know, working blue-collar jobs, but you got a house. Take the first kid at birth.
What?
And then I'm there to watch this woman. We go there, and there's police stalking around. You name it. They're trying to make her sign documents. They're threatening her. Mike's got a hidden camera getting footage of this. They're telling her, you better do it right now. And the cop's leaning down and going, showing his teeth, what's your problem? She goes,
So then the cops are bad for this, right?
And then all of a sudden they grab us, threaten to arrest us, throw us out of the hospital. And then eyewitnesses that were still there said they just grabbed her and squeezed her arm. We talked to her, of course, on the TV show. Squeezed her arm and said, sign it! She did, and they go, that's better, grab the kid, you know, that's it, folks.
Yeah, I don't believe this story as it's told. Although you do make a really good point, and I guess Alex's response to that would be, the old cops are only doing this because the CPS makes them do it,
oh
or something
God.
Like that.
I'm sure
there's a workaround
okay.
to this.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is, I mean, this is scary, if you're listening, this is something to be scared of.
Yeah, I suppose the cops coming in and stealing your baby in broad daylight with all of these people around witnessing it, and only one of whom is apparently retelling the story. All of those people in the hospital, all of the doctors, nurses, all of the rest of the people, never told this story once, but he's somehow been
there. And Mike Hansen, his cameraman, has secretly recorded footage of this
that
is conspicuous in its absence. I've not seen this, and I've watched a lot of his content, even from back in these times. His documentaries and what have you. I think this would be pretty shocking stuff.
Boy, if I was telling the story, I'd be like, you know what? Let's play that footage right now.
It'd be good. It'd be helpful.
It would be contextual.
But I think that it's more just a misrepresentation of something that he wants to present as this, they're going to steal your kids. But they are going to steal a particular kind of kid.
Oh, yeah. I bet there's no...
As you heard, if you're a crack dealer, they don't want your kid.
Right. Huh.
But Alex has to make things a little bit more explicit.
I was going
to
say.
And then it got even sicker. We then got the actual brief where they had her flagged on the computer for the next time she went to a hospital. This is basically they were just picking the apple tree, you know, kidnapping her second kid. They knew she was an easy pushover, her and her husband, you know, poor white folks. They go in, and, you know, these are prize babies, folks. I mean, they admit it they're prize because they're white. They get a lot of money on them in the adoption after a couple years of siphoning off money for raising them a bit. This is all admitted.
It's all admitted. They want...
Okay.
These prize white babies.
Right. What's the going rate for a white baby these days?
I don't know, but I don't think this is a major concern for the Child Protective Services.
No, I don't.
Although for Alex, it seems to be front and center. And all of this is being brought up, and this is the theme and basically the entirety of this episode.
Sure.
Because Alex has found a story in the Denver Post that is going to basically spiral from here.
Okay.
I can't stand it anymore. I'm pulling my hair out. I'm watching criminals engage in kidnapping, and then nothing's done to them. This is the Denver Post who's outraged, who's normally, you know, socialist and for all this, but it's even outraging Diane Carman. Now, this is the Denver Post on Infowars.com. We're updating it right now. Agency seizure of babies still a sad mystery. Victoria Goodluck sat in the sweltering living room of her Westminster home Monday afternoon, her breast throbbing under the weight of so much milk. Her baby girl, born early Friday morning, was in protective custody. Protective custody. Her five other children weren't. The kids peeked out of the window and played quietly as Adams County social worker interviewed the parents and inspected the house and the family environment. Now, they've already kidnapped the kid. Wait till you get to this. But now they're stomping around the house, no warrant. You get to the threatening people. I mean, they don't even care.
So it's wild to learn that in 2003, the Denver Post was a socialist publication, especially considering that it was operated by Media News Group Incorporated, the second largest newspaper conglomerate in the country. Kind of seems like Alex might just throw that word socialist around randomly, like it doesn't mean anything.
It might mean just I disagree with them from time to time.
Or they don't explicitly endorse the severely right-wing politics that I love.
I haven't met him at a KKK meeting.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him there.
So this,
socialists?
So this is a story about a woman who had her child taken temporarily by Child Protective Services. But there are some very important details in the story that are going to be interesting to see if Alex ignores, because the reality of the story does not work for the narratives that Alex is trying to build up about the CPS.
Oh, yeah.
But they do if you lie.
Ah, that's such a good trick.
Yeah.
Why do they always get away with that?
So here Alex gets more into the story.
The Reverend Heidi McGinnis of North Presbyterian Church insists that social workers in Denver Health Medical Center mistakenly assumed Goodluck and her husband, Philip Gates, were homeless. Now, that's what they said in Austin. They told the woman, and we've been to a bunch of these, you can't leave, stay right here, we've got people coming to help you with some services. And the police come in, they stand on each side, they'll grab the woman by the arms, they'll go, now it's time to sign. But folks, they do this out in the open.
So one of the sources that's cited in the article is their pastor, McGinnis.
Right.
And McGinnis has speculated that the hospital thought that they were homeless.
Sure.
And so Alex riffs about it a little bit. He covers the story a little bit more.
Hospital officials contact Denver Department of Human Services about their concerns for the child's safety on Saturday. On Sunday morning, two-day-old Sunshine Gates was whisked away or as Ms. McGinnis describes it, they stole our baby. Sue Cobe, Human Services spokeswoman, said she could not comment on the case. Instead, she talked about policy, phrasing her words carefully. When we get a referral, we are obliged to follow up on it, she said. We rely heavily on family cooperation. Oh, got it. No Fifth Amendment.
Fifth Amendment? What?
I mean, yeah.
So if you're just listening to Alex, you would not have very important context about this story that he's reading, and it's entirely intentional on his part. He tells the story he wants the audience to hear and hides the details that are inconvenient for his ability to spin a bullshit yarns. The biggest piece of information he's leaving out is that the family was unhoused a couple years prior, and Good Luck's husband was, quote, pretty sure that this had to do with outdated medical records.
Right. Okay.
He believed that there was a misunderstanding that stemmed from medical records they had on file being from a time when they were experiencing homelessness,
right,
which makes the whole thing kind of make a lot more sense.
Right.
Over the years since, they've had tons of temporary addresses, so you can kind of understand how none of these would necessarily be in the medical records, and CPS would be tasked with offering resources to an unhoused family having a child.
Right.
The second thing that Alex is not telling his audience is that the baby was put in CPS custody on Sunday and was returned to Ms. Goodluck on Monday evening.
Ooh!
It's something that's unfortunate and may not have been handled perfectly, and maybe it shouldn't have happened. And likely, if, you know, better record keeping was done by all parties involved, it wouldn't have. But this wasn't a kidnapping, and it lasted around 24 hours.
Right.
It was about the amount of time that they needed to correct their clerical error and do the paperwork.
Right.
The third thing that Alex is leaving out for now, but we'll have to address later, is that Good Luck is Navajo, and her husband is Lakota. Alex is not bringing this detail up because he's trying to do this whole jag about how the system's really after white children, as
right.
he expressed.
Right.
And to address that dynamic not existing in this big story he's covering would be kind of suspicious.
Especially if it's indigenous people
right.
instead.
And yeah. it leads to another major problem for his entire narrative. According to a 2017 release from the National Indian Child Welfare Association, quote, research and data from the states tells us that American Indian / Alaska Native children are disproportionately represented or overrepresented in the child welfare system nationwide, especially in foster care. This means that higher percentages of AI/AN children are found in the child welfare system than in the general population. The overrepresentation of AIAN children often starts with reports of abuse and neglect at rates proportionate to their population numbers, but grows higher at each major decision point from investigation to placement, culminating in the overrepresentation of AIAN children in placements outside the home. One study found that, due in large part to systemic bias, where abuse has been reported, AIAN children are 2 times more likely to be investigated, 2 times more likely to have allegations of abuse substantiated, and 4 times more likely to be placed in foster care than white children.
Right.
This disproportionality has gotten worse in the time since, but the rates, it was still significant in 2003. But this is a dynamic that Alex is not equipped to deal with. He doesn't actually care about fixing real problems with how the CPS operates, and he's actually averse to even acknowledging those problems, because for him, the CPS narrative is really just a vehicle for him to engage in white grievance.
Yeah.
And to the extent that he will ever acknowledge that these are, you know, a Navajo mother and a Lakota father, he only will recognize it in a, like, now they're going to do it to us.
Now they're doing it to
right?
everyone.
That is the way that he views this. And actually looking at the real dynamics is counterproductive for him.
I mean, it's just such fucking bullshit of, like, you are at symptom number 7 of the problem. That is, why were they unhoused in the first place? Let's start fucking way back when.
Yeah,
and
I'm
go
not
with,
sure.
In what world are we allowing that to happen? And then you go back even further and you go, not only are they unhoused currently in our terrible system, but they are from a people who were genocided by everybody. And we're not,
disproportionate taking of children.
Totally!
Is,
and from the beginning!
Is not a part of genocide.
Part of their genocide! What's the doing of the thing that we're doing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Understood in its proper context, this story that Alex is covering is a prime opportunity to discuss this very clearly discriminatory pattern in how these government entities treat Native families. Further, it could be an opportunity to discuss the ways that benign mistakes like out-of-date medical information can lead to really difficult situations, but they don't necessarily have to lead to disasters. Either of these options would bring new, real, useful information to his audience, but neither would create the feelings that he wants to evoke, namely that all white people are under attack and the government is coming to take your children.
Yeah.
Taking note of the details that Alex chooses to ignore about stories is often a really important part of understanding his editorial process and illustrating what it actually is that he considers important.
Right.
The truth is, informing the audience isn't important. The truth itself isn't, but spreading racially based fear is pretty super important.
Yeah.
And I want to be totally clear about this. Alex is excluding information actively and intentionally so the audience doesn't get the full picture. After he comes back from break, he continues reading the article, and this is fucking damning.
Goodluck said she told the hospital admissions personnel her address, but while I was there, people kept coming up to me and asking if this is right, see, swarming, because a lot of them get cuts of cash. She didn't understand it. No, didn't understand the new 1984 cesspool we live in. The family had lived in Denver area months, and it goes on.
Here's what Alex accidentally started reading and then stopped himself mid-sentence. Quote, Goodluck said she told hospital admissions personnel her address, but while I was there, people kept coming up to me and asking if this is right. She didn't understand it. The family had lived in a Denver area homeless shelter for about 6 months in 1999 and later in a basement apartment provided by a member of the church where Philip Gates has become an ordained elder. It's just one chapter in the family's struggles.
Right.
Alex, you heard him say they had lived in a Denver area and then stopped right there.
Yep.
Right there at the word homeless, because that validates why there might have been concern that went awry, obviously not handled perfectly in this situation, but it gives an explanation for why this situation is happening.
Right.
Why there was cause for the people to think that maybe she was unhoused.
Right.
And he can't let that be. It has to be a random thing where there's evil intent on the part of these CPS people. He's lying to his audience, and it's so clear. When you hear him drop off right there when reading this, it's so fucking obvious.
Yeah, that's fucked. That's just fucked. I'm happier when he's making shit up whole cloth, because that's just sad and evil. Like, that's an actual bad thing to do.
Well, it also very clearly shows that he didn't read this before he decided to dedicate an entire show to anti-CPS narratives based on, or at least sort of
bolstered by this kind of bullshit.
Well, at least seemingly precipitated by him reading this story.
Yeah.
This story is the launching point for him to have a show all about the CPS and the evils of it.
Right.
And He didn't even read it.
This was before he spent 3 hours every morning reading and then did his show and then spent 5 hours every evening reading. This was before he got serious, Dan, and started doing a lot more drugs.
Yeah, I'm sure. So this is also bullshit.
Okay.
Gates, who was a tribal policeman, said he was shot while working on a joint investigation with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. It goes on to talk about the family. This guy's a veteran cop and been to church and remember. I mean, and you're not going to get your kid back. I understand that. They don't care. They want this to be in the paper.
Didn't they already get their kid back by this time? Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow. That is just absolutely amazing.
Alex is not telling his audience that the family had already got the kid back by the time the article he's reading was published. He's also stopping himself from disclosing the part where it says that Gates is permanently disabled because of that shooting that he mentions, which naturally would be even more cause for child welfare services to be interested in providing whatever assistance they can.
Yeah.
This stuff works against Alex's narrative, though, so it's censored from the most uncensored and most unfiltered news program in the world.
Totally.
Alex, everyone just hates him because he's too truthful, though, really. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason that everyone thinks he's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not because he's a fucking intentional liar.
He speaks truth to power and it threatens the people. You know, I mean, it is so weird when we can separate it because he's doing a radio show. But essentially, if she was there holding her baby, he would be looking in their eye screaming, "You're never going to get that baby back."
Yeah.
And then she's like, "I'm holding it." And he's like, "This is crazy. Just out of these people are 1984ing all over the place here. I'm holding the baby." But he's on the radio, so it's like, oh, I don't even notice this person isn't existing the way they're supposed
to. Just abstract to him. He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
You know, just fake emotion and
lie. People are real. Is that a conversation that we need to have with Alex of like other people exist?
I know that we do think that he has a bit of a solipsism to him. He has trouble with object permanence.
That's definitely true.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's certainly more in the present than it was in the past, but maybe it's always been there.
Yeah, you know, if you give your children John Birch books before you teach them object permanence, I think we wind up here.
So yeah, you have just this real nonsense demonstration here.
Yeah.
He's lying very intentionally about this article as a way to push his anti-CPS politics. So look, he goes to another break.
Sure.
And maybe he accidentally read the article during the
break.
Ooh,
that's a bad idea. He had a good chance.
Now, in Austin, Texas, if you're poor and blue-collar and go in for some help having your child, about a third of the time they take your kid.
Sorry,
and you don't get them back.
That's so many times.
In this case, they have gotten the child back. When I say they're never getting their child back again, they're probably going to show back over and over and over and over again.
Sure.
Which they've done in many of these cases. And this happened mainly because he was a police officer. Is why they're doing this.
Yeah, that's why it happened.
Yep.
So he read the article because he's correcting himself that they got their kid back.
Right. Yeah.
He's aware of that information now. But, you know, assuming that he has read the article, he now knows, you know, the thing that he censored himself from saying.
Yeah.
And now he's just saying it's because the guy is a cop. But he's not a cop.
No, he's
he was a cop 22 years ago.
Who was shot.
Yeah.
In the line of duty.
Yeah, and is permanently disabled for it, and is now a church elder.
Right.
So.
Great. Good work.
Yeah. I just think this is trash. I find it to be awful. And then it gets even worse because this whole pageant goes on for quite a while. And then Alex has a guest. And it's his water filter sponsor.
Sure. I mean, he's got
thoughts.
This is
one of the few filters, the only I know of, that's not reverse osmosis, that will actually remove this garbage. And it's portable. It's awesome. Jim, thanks for being on with us.
Always a pleasure, Alex. And by the way, I always enjoy listening to you rant and rave. I don't know where you get all your information. You've got to be a prodigy to get all this stuff and cram it in your head and get it out to the phone.
Well, I mean it's my webmaster.
It's one way.
It's my wife. It's
her
Violet.
Tennis partner.
It's Paul Joseph Watson. It's the people that email me all these. But this is, I got stacks of stories this bad today, and I've already spent 35 minutes on it. I mean, the paper has to admit this is evil.
Yeah, so I find it really sad. I mean, they're in a commercial relationship, so you don't expect necessarily
pushback.
Right. But it's just weird to be like, God, you are so smart. You got so much information in that bean.
Ugh.
After we've just listened to him make shit up.
I mean, oof.
And intentionally leave out information that is illuminating about a story.
There is that con man kind of feel that you just... Like, it still blows my mind whenever you feel that actual con man feeling of that person saying, wow, you are smart.
Right.
To somebody clearly making everything up. And it's just like, they got taken in,
well,
and that's it.
But again, it's the commercial relationship makes it like, maybe he just he's putting that aside and blowing smoke.
Yeah, I would imagine that if you have reservations, now is not the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I was thinking about that I think is a really good point is that Alex could recognize every piece of information about this article and still tell the story that he wants to tell.
Yeah.
He would have a more difficult time with it, perhaps. he could not paint the picture that the CPS is randomly just accusing people of being unhoused or something. And like using that false accusation as an excuse to steal their child. He perhaps couldn't do that, but you'd have to open it up. You could open it up into a, like, that is not cause to take someone's child.
Sure.
You know, there's ways that he could incorporate all this information, but it's more difficult. And it's more difficult in a way that leads you to actual solutions.
Yeah.
It leads you to reforming the system that is there as opposed to creating a cartoonish version of it.
Sure.
To be mad about and demand be demolished.
Well, and ultimately it just simply allows you to identify despite Alex insisting that this only happens to white people, it allows you to identify with somebody non-white, which cannot happen on this show. They're Bolton.
So Alex takes some calls, and naturally he gets calls from people who have situations with trouble with children and
absolutely.
CPS type stuff.
They made it up, didn't they?
So he's got a caller, and this caller is having a difficult time with her child.
Okay.
And Alex has some weird things to say.
It got to the point she was diagnosed with ADHD. Yeah, but by the time the state was done with her, she had 9 different labels, psychiatric labels attached
to her. Okay, how did they take her from you and put her out in California?
Well, she was given to actually the father who abandoned her at birth, who has a history of abuse in this situation, but she was sent to live with him. And
how's she doing now?
She's a mess. I mean, her life has been very hard, and
I wish I had time to talk to her in person. I would look in her eyes and say, energize, break these bonds, you know, in the name of Jesus Christ.
What?
And if she really has faith, I'm telling you, I've seen people healed of this bondage. She needs to get off all drugs.
Yeah, Alex would faith heal.
Wow.
Yeah.
He would put his hand on her forehead and push her to the floor, and then when she stood up, she would go back and live with her mom?
Energize! I don't remember exactly where this woman is calling from, but I think that they're really dancing over something if this child was given, the custody was given to a father who hasn't been in her life, who lives in a different state. There's something going on here. And it's not just she got these diagnoses that I disagreed with.
Yeah.
That there's something really messed up here.
There's a larger story.
And dealing with people who are telling these stories and being like, yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if they're unreliable narrators.
It seems really irresponsible.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to be like, you know, I mean, what you should I do, I guess, is say thank you for your call and then stop talking. But I mean, if you wanted to keep talking, then you would have to ask like further probing questions. Like,
well,
okay,
Alex,
well, then
doesn't do that.
Exactly.
They just yell about how CPS is
evil. Oh, you're totally right. No, you're totally right.
Yeah. And then the caller says this and it just bums me the fuck out.
And I just really want to thank you for your strength and your conviction, Alex. And I listen to you just about every day as often as I can. I stop doing what I'm doing to listen and learn.
Gah!
And then I pass on what I've learned. And I've lost a lot of friends along the way, and I've lost a lot of my family.
Well, that's what happens in Nazi Germany. A lot of people want to serve the Hitler system.
Yes.
A lot of people want to serve Adolf Hitler. And so they don't like you saying what Hitler's doing is wrong. They think all this is normal.
Yes.
Yeah, that is a bummer. That's cult shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Boy,
I study your broadcast and I tell people in my life about it, and I've lost friends and family.
Yeah,
because
when you start with my child was sent to live with a father she didn't really know in a different state, and then end with I've lost friends and family because I tell them all about what Alex Jones says all
has
the
taught
time.
Me.
Then, I mean, you're starting to put some things together. And that's not the full picture.
And it's so bad for, I know Alex can't behave any other way, really, right, but right. It's so bad for him to be like, yeah, that's because they can't handle the truth. They love worshiping Hitler. Mean,
yeah.
It's just doubling down on this abusive influence.
Yeah, you're never going to see a cult leader be like, hey, listen, you might be going a little bit too far with my bullshit. Mm-hmm. How about you step back?
Right.
Go out, go hang out with your friends at the Sonic or whatever it is you kids do, and then come back and we'll get back into this cult stuff.
Ma'am, this is supposed to be a fun con. And
you're really bumming me out, lady. Yeah. Lady, yeah. I'm just trying to screw people out of money, yeah. And now you're telling me I'm hurting them?
This is going to be tough for me to look in the mirror, but I will try and
smash all of my mirrors.
I'll deal with my wounds by rubbing money on them.
Yeah,
and,
that'll do it.
Feel better.
I'll buy another house.
So that's a bummer, and I think we need to feel a little bit better by going to something a little more fun, and that is it's time to go to Alex's memories of his past corner.
Ooh, I like it.
Here's a fun story about Alex in high school.
Another dead dog?
No.
Oh.
This is what they do, and I've seen it 1,000 times. Folks, I was a straight A-plus student.
I put what?
A couple years in high school, you know, I screwed around, was on the football team.
Phone calls.
didn't go to school, you know, quite a bit, played hooky, all that stuff. But by the time I was a sophomore, into my sophomore year, junior, senior, by the time I was a senior, I was making 100, 100, 100, 100, 98, 99. I mean, my report card was a joke. It was so good. I think when I graduated,
that is a joke.
You know, that year it was a 99 average or something. I mean, it was ridiculous. There was somebody who had 100, so of course, you know, they get all the awards.
Yeah.
And so I was done with school.
That's why you
didn't get
the awards.
Had too many credits, so, you know, they had me in their first period to be a assistant. I would walk around and bring the notes to the class for people that had to come to see the counselor. Little did I know to be secret policed, you know, to be set up or whatever, to be brought to the principal.
So that's so Trump right there, man. It's like my report card was so good, it's a joke.
I mean, yeah, like what?
The best report card
in this is 2003, man. They were born for each other. Yeah. They really were.
So apparently Alex at this point in high school is getting perfect grades in basically every class, and also he's constantly having sex with and impregnating adult women as well as fellow students and getting abortions.
And he's a Satanist
also. Yeah, he's being recruited into a satanic ring run by the elites in Rockwall, who wanted to stop him from fulfilling his destiny of being the linchpin in God's plans to vanquish the devil.
Right.
Also, at some point in the middle, he uncovered a drug dealing conspiracy in the Rockwall Police Department, who threatened to kill him
if
his dad didn't move him to Austin.
Yeah.
Also, he's getting into constant street fights because black people wouldn't stop harassing him because he was white.
Right.
Also, he smoked crack a couple times.
He did say that.
What an amazing, almost unbelievable backstory.
It is.
I think unbelievable is the operative word Alex's self-mythology.
I would say a little bit overstuffed. If I was describing the plot of this movie here, I would say overstuffed. Streamline.
Yeah.
Streamline. Focus on a few important details.
Also, look, I didn't get good grades in high school, and I did end up dropping out before I went to college.
Yeah.
I dropped out of high school, but I was friends with a lot of nerds.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And I was friends with the guy who was the valedictorian of the class before me, a year older than me. And look, they don't just choose one person who gets accolades. There's first of all, I dropped out of high school and I was a National Merit Scholar.
Of course you were.
So, there are National Merit Scholars.
Right.
There are all kinds of people who get scholarships to colleges.
Of course.
There is the valedictorian. There's sometimes co-valedictorians.
There's
the other, cum laude, in high school.
Sure.
I remember there being, four people who were, not president, vice president, treasurer, secretary, or anything. But there was, the valedictorian.
The cream
and then
of the
three
crop
other
kind
people
of fun.
Who were,
yeah.
Who were, got real damn good grades.
Yeah.
If Alex was second to one guy who got all 100s.
I mean, it's borderline bronze, silver, gold medals kind of situation.
Nonsense,
yeah.
Alex.
Yeah.
Also, in high school, my buddy Cole, he helped out with the counselor's office, going around and delivering passes to students who had appointments so they could be, they wouldn't be counted as tardy or truant in their class.
Sure.
And that dude definitely didn't have all A's. He just had an open period, and the counselors liked him. But I guess in Alex's case, they were really trying to secretly deputize him or some shit.
I think that would have been the first step. You know, like, we've talked about the school-to-prison pipeline, but we don't talk about the school-to-globalism pipeline.
Right. It goes through the counselor's office.
Absolutely. Yep. Who else would be there? They're not busy.
Yeah. The counselors loved Cole. I would sometimes come and help him hand out passes because I would just skip classes randomly,
too. Yeah, why not?
And they would always, like, whenever he'd walk in, they'd be like, "Big Sexy!" It was the best. They loved
that. That is great. That is great.
So, yeah, apparently for Alex, it was much darker.
I like a more collegial relationship between teachers and students in high school. That was not the case for me. It was very, very confrontational, and I'm sure that was probably mostly my fault.
I feel like, you know, it went both ways for me. Some teachers, it was very confrontational, and then some were far more like... treated you like a almost like a little equal.
One of my favorite teacher did say, like, well, if they didn't fuck around with you, then they wouldn't have had a problem. As that's probably not what you should tell to a 14-year-old.
Probably not.
But I mean, he did have a point. He didn't fuck around with me, and we had a great time.
Yeah. I had a broadcast production class, and the teacher was a guy named Ron Widman, who was the best. And I was in the class 3 years in high school. I had a key to the room because it had like an editing bay.
Nice.
And so I would come like after hours and edit video and stuff. And so the class was mostly just about making stories for the public access. Like there was a show called 16 Minutes that was the school's, the students make stories about the local community.
Sure.
And then Ron Widman's the host of it.
60 Minutes, but you only get 16.
Yeah. And so we were just told we could make whatever stories we wanted.
Sure.
And so I would go.
Again, not something you should tell a 14-year-old.
I did one story about how secretly Chess Club was like a hotbed of communism at
that
the high school.
Sense.
And so I had my friend Matt pretend to be like, I did a plant, and like one of the guys in the chess club was a friend of mine, and so he played along with
That's great.
The guy who sponsored the chess club, like the teacher and I were also on friendly terms,
sure.
He was messing around a bit.
He was all about it,
And so I made this story, and I turned it in to be aired, and Ron, he was just like, he would always just be like, "Dan, you're killing me. You're killing me. What are you doing?" But he'd still put it on.
Oh,
that's good stuff.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Okay. That's a good teacher move where you're like, you're doing this wrong, but also, come on, baby, you're on the screen.
Yeah. So anyway, Alex was a Gestapo for the counselor's office or something.
I mean, man, that's just one of those things that I hate when people lie about. Why? Why would you lie about it?
Because you're incredibly insecure.
I know, but like the only thing I've learned after high school is how stupid all of the information on the tests was, because the better information was everywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you do well in school and you're proud of it, there's nothing to be ashamed of.
No, that's great.
I think that if you didn't do well in school and you're lying about it because you want people to think you did well in school.
That's not good.
No.
That's not good. You got to stop doing that.
Yeah.
Just be like, hey, listen, I didn't get good grades in school. See? Now we're off to the races, buddy.
Right.
Easy peasy.
It's that Eminem line. Stupid as shit, rich as fucking
that's
proud of it.
The way you do it.
Yes. So Alex has another story from his youth in school.
Yeah.
This one's a little bit longer because it's a little bit confusing.
Where's Ronson for all of this? This should be an episode that he's listening to this story being like, what the fuck? He shouldn't be allowed to say that.
We're going to need a fact check on
this
one. We're
going to need a Ronson here.
I'm down there, and I've told the story a few times. Let me tell it briefly, and then I'll go to Jim and others. I'm down there, and this is Anderson High School. And we had some general at the time, literally an Army Reserve general as our, what was his name, as the principal. And I would actually do the work. He just loved it. He'd order me around. I'd unload giant pallets of paper and do all this stuff, and I didn't care. And one day, I mean, it was like a month before school got out, I had this horrible headache, and I knew. I said, I'm getting the flu. And, you know, 17 years old, I still had to call mommy so I could drive home. You know, had my Mustang out in the parking lot. But I go to the nurse's office, she takes my temperature, she goes, oh, yeah, 101, looks like you're getting the flu. And I'm like, yeah, I just want to go home. She goes, well, before you call your mother, you're pretty good looking. And I mean, what? I'm real good looking at 17. I'm getting right now, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes.
I press, knew the story was made up at the beginning,
you know,
but what?
30 pounds, 185 pounds is what I weighed. I mean, I was just, I mean, I look like Bruce Lee, folks. There's photos of me out there on the internet. The one time one of my friends sent a picture of me lifting weights to the paper, and it got put in the paper when I was about 20. But the point is that she's hitting on me, and she's pretty good looking. She's a blonde herself, 30 years old. She goes, yeah. She goes, you use drugs? And I go, I'm wearing a polo shirt, slacks, and you know, topsider shoes. And I go, do I look like I use drugs?
Yes.
And I mean, at that time, I didn't even drink coffee. I go, I don't even drink coffee. I remember this very crisp memory of this. She says, well, you ever want to, you know, she started hitting on me. You ever want to go out? I guess it was about a month till I was out of high school, so she was, it was like a month till school guy. She was hitting on me.
I'm sure.
And so I'm sitting there, and this is happening, and she says, use drugs? And I go, no. She goes, you like speed? And I said, no, I just told you I don't. She smoked marijuana? No. I said, why are you asking me all this?
Because I want to get fucked up.
She watches me, you know, every morning in first period, walk around in there, you know, doing all the work for these people. I brought supplies into her before when it came off the truck. And she says, well, I want to give you the card to a doctor. You got a lot of energy. He said, Ritalin, it's like speed. You'll like it. I mean, folks,
a love affair
America,
began.
Okay?
Yeah, so he had a flu. The nurse wanted to fuck him. And also, she wanted to give him speed because he had a lot of energy. So let's get him more energy. What is this? This is a story that happened.
I am... here's how I feel like this story actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Alex was kind of sick. Not that sick. Wanted to go home anyways, so he's going to give his mom a call. Gets the temperature, and they're like, okay. And then, while I've got you here, let me ask you a question. Are you doing drugs right now?
That's possible.
And then it's like, hey, you know,
she was
you
trying
have
to give me drugs and fuck me.
You have ADHD, you know, so there's this medication out there. I don't know. Maybe it might help you deal with some of your, are you trying to fuck me? Great. Great. Yeah. No. Go home. Go home, please.
I have a story that's
so glad school is going to be out in a month.
I have a story that's kind of close to this, but it's not really. It has nothing to do with a teacher trying to pick me up or anything.
Sure.
But in college, I went to the student health center because I had strep throat. And I couldn't swallow pills. I didn't know what was going on. I hadn't had it before. And so like I had a terrible fever. And so the guy who was the doctor at the student health center gave me some liquid steroids to take. And he did say, careful, this is what the rappers rap about.
That's the way you do it.
And it's not like he was trying to give me drugs.
Nope.
But that was a little bit inappropriate, but in a delightful
way.
That is a
delightful.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. That's great. Also, the very, what would I say, uptight way of describing it. This is what the rappers rap about.
He might have said the rappers sing about.
That's taking it up another level.
He wasn't like an old, out-of-touch person or anything.
He's a professional.
His framing of it, his phrasing was still weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can still remember that 20 years later is a delightful moment where I'm like 100-something fever, just like unable to swallow a pill. Yeah. And just like, hey, this is the purple stuff.
Every now and again, there are those moments where I'm like, what if I could run into that person? You know, after it's because there are tons of those little memories you have where you're like, this person has no idea that because they flicked a penny at me 20 years ago, that is in my brain forever. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to go talk to them and have them have that very validating feeling of, I have no idea what you're talking about, sir.
Yeah,
like that kind of thing.
I think you would probably come off real crazy because you'd be like, all right, here's what happened.
Important this is to me.
Nope.
This is how important it is to me. You don't care at all, but I need to bother you.
So we had a fun time in that corner of Alex's remembrance.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
Where was the Satanism in that story?
Non-existent.
Yeah, I want more Satanism in all of these stories.
Well, actually, the school nurse was working on behalf of the Satanists who were trying to get Alex hooked on speed.
That helps, yeah.
In order to take him away from his connection with God because he was going to be so important in the plot against the devil later on. We solved it.
Yep.
So now something really fucked up happens.
Okay.
I can't believe that this happened. Alex has the dad from the Denver Post story on as a guest.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
So let's go ahead and go to the Reverend Heidi McGinnis of the North Presbyterian Church, saying that social workers are out of control. And, oh, yeah, that's putting it lightly. And, of course, the husband, as well, the father, Mr. Gates, who are now both on the show with us. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Who would like to make some comments about what's developed first, the Reverend or Mr. Gates?
Well,
sounds like we got people on speakerphones. Or something's whistling in the background.
So, yeah, he has them on, which is crazy, because this is so much more disrespectful. He hadn't read the article before he got on air, but they had booked them as guests.
Yeah.
On that show.
Yeah.
I was floored by this.
Listen, if you do like a nightly talk show, I didn't think that Jon Stewart read every book of the person he was interviewing that night. I bet he skimmed through it. I bet he did his best for every book.
I bet he read more than some people might think.
I bet he read a lot
because
more
than would advanced copies,
equate to a say single article. Mm. I bet he read more than 1,000 words of every single one of those books. I would guarantee it.
Well, those interviews are probably booked pretty well in advance.
Yeah,
I think that one of the things that's really weird about this is like this is 2003. It's like his wife is probably booking the show, right?
Yep.
I mean, like he doesn't have a big team at this point. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have his Daria.
Nope.
How did this happen?
Did anybody...
I understand the booking happening.
Sure.
That makes sense to me.
Sure.
You can reach out to them, see if they want to come on and do an interview.
It happens 2 seconds.
Absolutely. How does it happen that you know you're going to do this interview and you don't read the article and you whiff the story, essentially?
How is it that you didn't even have somebody give you the Cliff's Notes version of the article?
Yeah.
You know?
How do you have to correct yourself that they got their kid back?
I mean, that's crazy. That is the central thing to the story!
How do you seem to be caught off guard in the middle of the story that the guy is a cop?
Yeah, that's not good.
No, that's a pretty big detail. So, look, they don't talk about the past homelessness.
Sure.
Alex steers away from a lot of the, like, germane issues.
Right.
Because he wants to just talk about, like, hey, let's talk about how evil these people are.
He wants
to
talk shit.
Normally, a social worker will count coup. You know what that term is.
Yes.
Normally, it's an Indian term.
Wow.
Native American term. Well, normally they will, but
yikes.
All cultures do it.
Yes.
After the victory, was there a child-grabbing celebration? Did she make any comment or...
Well,
what?
Was there a smile?
I believe she stepped out of the hallway, and she was out in the hallway for a while. We were not sure what went on, but... The charge nurse that was in charge of the floor there said that she was kind of upset by what had happened out there. We didn't get her version of what was, but we stayed in the room.
Wait, the charge nurse was upset by what she saw?
Yes.
So
yes.
She saw a vampiric celebration dance, and literally,
probably.
Folks, I've seen them do it. So you watched a culture of death dance. This must have been horrible. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
She did the robot out in the hallway.
I was going to say, what is the vampiric celebration dance?
Well, it's the robot because it's dehumanizing. It's taking a human and taking on the characteristics of a robot.
Do vampires traditionally want robots?
Yes.
Oh, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
In Alex's world, the metaphorical robots. Or
sure.
The metaphorical vampires want literal robots.
See, because I'm seeing something more along the lines of like... Ray Lewis's celebration dance, because this is 2003, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Ray Lewis and the Baltimore Ravens still wrecking the world, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming that, like, she burst out of the door and then, like, did one of those, with the things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Have you seen the dance?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. So, yeah, Alex just wants to create these images, these, like, evil images that are evocative for the audience. The story
right.
is good for bringing those up and selling them to the audience. The
totally.
Feeling is what's important.
When he interjects before he's, like, he's talking to the father, and the father is trying to tell the story. And so whenever Alex says, like, oh, she was smiling, wasn't she? He's like, well, I mean, she did leave the... So he's implanted into that guy's mind before we even go any further that it's possible, in fact, likely, and then later... guaranteed and true that she did a dance.
And we're not entirely even sure, based on the way he's telling this, like, what the charge nurse was talking about. Like, did she think it was inappropriate what went on in the room, the conversation that the CPS people had with the mother? It's unclear, but it doesn't really matter on the show because it's all just fuel on the fire of hating the CPS.
Yep.
So one of the things that is clear is that the Reverend McGinnis and this father are both upset with the CPS. And one of the things that they want to make clear is that there should be ways to stop these processes when they're being done in error.
Right.
You know, they're not talking about overthrowing the CPS like Alex is.
No, safeguard.
Right.
Yeah.
If there is something that is erroneous, outdated information that people are acting on, there should be a way to put a halt in the proceedings so they don't go so far as to remove a child.
Exactly.
When you're just going to have them away for 24 hours or whatever. Like, it's... There should be safeguards, basically.
Yeah.
And Alex is not in agreement on this.
Oh, of course not.
We want to say that there are many dedicated social workers, and we're certainly not, that do act in good faith. We're certainly not declaring war on them. What we are really shocked about is that there's no mechanism in place to put a break on these proceedings because, you know, Alex, I think your listening audience and I, we know that on hospitals, on weekends, hospitals, usually the offices have kind of a slowing down effect, and what we're shocked and outraged about is the great speed with which this child was yanked away from her mother's death.
Ma'am, you can say you're not declaring war. They declared war on us. Sure, there's a few good people in the system, but when you get into the CPS area, they have a mandate by the government. I've read the documents on air. This is a business. This is about breaking up the family, and I think if you found out the full ramifications, you'd be shocked. The hospitals, city hospitals, interface with these people and actually profit from it. I just want you to know that.
So I think that kind of illustrates the dynamic that's involved.
Yeah.
There is an awareness campaign, something that is legitimate on the part of this family and this reverend, a request, something that is a structural improvement that I think even people within the CPS would be like, you know what? That is something that needs to be addressed. Something that we could do a better job on.
If you just said to a regular CPS employee all day, every day, just like, hey, maybe we don't rip newborns from their mother's hands. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe we just don't do that. They'd be like, yeah, I think that makes sense.
And Alex has a different take on it. And
yes, burn it all down.
And they're at odds. And you can see that Alex doesn't respect his guest's perspective.
No.
He wants to get them to mirror his perspective. Mm-hmm. Because that's what's important, and that's what will sell the feeling to the audience that he needs to sell them in order to keep them in that cult-like state, that one caller
Absolutely.
Who bummed us out earlier.
No, I mean, part of it is, you know, it is a little bit like he's trying to red pill them at the same time, you know?
Yep.
Like when we were at the trial, you know, he's trying to red pill the jury, and he's thinking that he's doing it, like... On the phone right here, he's like, don't you guys want to start
himself.
A fucking war? Like, no.
The war has already started.
No, it's not.
They started it on us.
No.
So this was the 8th. That was a Friday.
Yeah.
And we're going to jump to the Monday show because it's kind of also a wasteland. Not much going on. But there is something really big going on.
Okay.
Paul Joseph Watson, my webmaster, from PrisonPlanet.com, who's also a great writer, has written his debut book. It is Order Out of Chaos, Elite-Sponsored Terrorism, and the New World Order, 334 pages long. I published it, and you can get it at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com by linking through to our secure online shopping cart. So please take advantage of that, and Paul Joseph Watson will be joining us to talk about the Dr. David Kelly murder. Yes, there's more evidence that it's a murder than a suicide, and they're calling it a suicide, so with no evidence of that, so we're going to call it a murder here. But that's where the preponderance of the evidence is going.
So this is about a month after Kelly died, and Alex has presented literally no new information past the vague insinuations he used to call Kelly's death a murder when he first covered it.
Right.
This is something that the Alex Jones is always right about stuff crowd should really think about. The protracted, long nonsense narratives that he gets up to.
Yeah.
Also, I love the way that Alex catches himself mid-sentence there. He's saying that the media is calling Kelly's death a suicide with no proof, and he almost said, so we're going to call it a murder with no proof.
Yep.
It was so
close. Really did. He really did have a certain amount of like, yeah, if they're going to do it, then I'll do it right back to him energy to him.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was right there.
Oof.
Also, Paul's book is out.
Yeah.
And that is just an opportunity for me to say that in my hand, I have a copy of The Great Reset, Alex's book.
Oh, my God.
I unfortunately did buy a copy of it.
Yeah.
I bought it through Amazon, though, so Alex's enemy Bezos would make a little money, which, honestly, it's just me cutting myself in both directions.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's great.
It's a double-edged sword. But, hey, it sucks. I've read a little bit of it so far.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I believe it.
And we'll talk about that in greater detail at a later date.
Yeah, you know, it's...
Maybe the next time we have some like really monumental episode number like 748 or something.
What are we on now, 720 something,
something like that?
Yeah, great. We're doing
some random number.
737. It'll be our flight episode.
Ooh,
we'll fly out of here.
747.
Yeah. 757.
777.
I really don't know how high it goes. Is there a 787?
No, but a 777. That's like a lottery.
That's true.
If Alex ever did a show in Vegas for 777, that's what we should cover.
That is what we would cover. Yeah.
Anyway, his book sucks, and so does Paul's.
Yeah.
But the David Kelly narrative is now growing. It is no longer just that this was a guy who's going to blow the whistle about the Iraq war and the weapons of mass destruction stuff.
Now he's hanging out with Saddam Hussein's kids?
No.
Oh.
But it goes deep.
Uh-oh.
Also, microbiologists with link to race-based weapons turning up dead, which tells me the globalists are about to start releasing that. This is from the American Free Press. Dr. David Kelly, of course, was involved in bioweapons of race-specific systems. Gordon Thomas, this is very important.
Yeah. So now...
I don't recall Kelly being involved in race-specific systems.
Well, I mean, he worked at Porton Down, and that means that Alex can say anything.
That's there. That's true.
So, yeah, the race-specific bioweapon people are dying, and David Kelly is an example of one of the murders that the globalists are doing to cover up their race-specific bioweapon because they're about to release it. There is a preoccupation that Alex has with race-specific bioweapons.
Oh, you think?
Yes.
I wonder what race it is he wishes weren't... hit by a race specific.
I have some theories.
It is ironic that he's never been like, and you know what would be terrible? A race specific not bioweapon that is a bioweapon for all other non-race specific bioweapon. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, that's kind of what he wants.
Well, I think the people who don't listen to his show much, you might hear some of the COVID stuff, let's say, like, especially in the early days of COVID when he was like, this is a race-specific bioweapon.
Sure.
And you'd think like, oh, that's an interesting angle he's going on.
Right.
Not realizing he does this shit all the fucking time. Race-specific bioweapons are always somehow
Ebola
in play.
Was race-specific for a while.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And it's always been like, at the end of the day, man, white people... are the only people that matter. That's what he's trying to get across. That's his raison d'etre.
So Paul is on, and they talk about his book a little bit, but Alex has another little theory that this hasn't panned out.
Well, also, here at HEB, about a half mile from where I'm sitting, where I'm nesting right now, is the clip I have in Police State 3 where I go in, and they've got the sign up that soon we're going to have inkless fingerprint readers. You'll have to do it here to buy stuff, to buy and sell, to make purchases. Oh, I think I read that before. And I talked to her. I go, well, is this hooked into the police? She goes, uh-huh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hooked in to, you know, check you when you thumbprint that you are who you say you are, the driver's license database. And, well, there it is. The signs are going in. And then in some of the stores, the thumb scanners are going in. And simultaneously, at the Home Depot by my house, guys, they pulled out just three of the checkout lanes about a year ago. They pulled out, you know, they have about 15 lanes or 12 lanes. They pulled out three where it would be self-serve. You scan your own stuff, do your own stuff. Well, now I was in there last week, and now they've pulled out three more. Now there's six, and I've read the federal plans. They're going to pull them all out. You're going to go in. They're going to say for security, and see, after they get the self-serves in, then they put the thumb printer in, which they're now doing. I mean, this is so sneaky, folks. Go ahead.
Well, we also had the article a couple of weeks ago out of America where McDonald's are introducing these self-serve counters as well as many different supermarkets. People need to recognize that it's not just about the government tracking what you buy. It's about them having the ability to refuse purchase on any particular product.
Still waiting on those thumb scanners and police ID databases to go into the grocery stores 19 years later here.
We got wireless cards like 3 years ago.
And, like, honestly, if you don't sign the back of your debit or credit card when you use it, people are supposed to ask for your ID, and they don't do that even. So, like, I don't know. Seems like what was going on here in Alex's theory maybe wasn't a real thing, and maybe the move towards automation was more about cutting down operating expenses by eliminating human workers. Also, yeah. I assume that if this clip that Alex is describing is real, it was a woman just being like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Just be like, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Also, Paul seems to have no idea what he's talking about. Right now, McDonald's can refuse to serve you for any reason, as long as it's not because you're a member of a protected class. If someone's making a scene, they can be refused service. If you suspect that someone's drunk, you can refuse service. If someone's barefoot or wearing no shirt, you can refuse them service. As long as you're not discriminating based on protected classes, you have the right to run your business how you see fit. Like, for instance, it's not illegal for a high-end restaurant to refuse to serve you if you don't fit their dress code. Or, like, a hotel cannot take a reservation from you if you stayed there before and you caused a problem. They can do that.
Yeah.
They can refuse service.
They do have that right.
Paul technically says that putting in self-checkout is about being able to deny purchase of some particular product, but this makes less sense.
Yeah.
Is he suggesting that I might one day go to McDonald's and they'll refuse to sell me anything but a McChicken because they think I've had too much red meat that day? Like, that seems like what he's saying, and that's bizarre.
I think I'm going to go further. If he's saying that it's the self-checkout thing that's doing it, then that would suggest to me that you're bringing all of these items, you're checking the beep, beep, and you get an item that they're like, no, you don't get to buy eggs.
Right.
Like, I don't understand. How is that helpful? There's not even a person there to stop me. I could just steal it and put it in my bag.
Right.
I steal shit from the self-checkout line by accident all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David Drake has that joke about how everything is bananas.
Yeah.
It rings up everything is bananas. But look, it is actually about this.
Yes. Oh, okay.
They're going to be able to tax you, so no matter, you'll still be able to pay cash, but they're going to swipe the card so it keeps a record of that, thus making it cashless, and then you're going to have all these different little taxes depending on what you're getting. And it says the ground hamburger won't be taxed as a fattening food unless you buy too much of it for that month. So it's actually introducing rationing. And then they're going to say, well, we have to do this tracking so terrorists don't attack the food supply. See how they always have the terror excuse to implement, but then when you read their own reports, it's about taxation and control.
So this is dumb. But also, the tracking your purchases of food would have no effect on being able to protect the supply chain from any kind of terrorist influence.
Right.
Like, the consumer end of it, it wouldn't make any sense as an excuse for them to use. So I find this uncompelling.
Yeah, you know, it is
no,
like,
beef for you.
It is so stupid, especially now that we know about metadata. You know, like, mm-hmm. before, they had no, oh, they could track you if they have a chip on your finger. And it's like, no, man, because your cell phone is someplace, they can figure out what your day is like easily. That's it. Just done. Your cell phone exists, well, so they know where every place you go.
There is some amount of data that is available.
Sure.
It is not to the level that Paul is predicting in this next clip.
No, it's not Enemy of the State starring Will Smith.
No. And this is, I mean, it's far beyond that even.
That's true.
According to Paul.
That is true.
In a similar vein to owning a mobile phone, which is seen as cool these days, obviously 10 years ago it was the new development. But in 10 years, they are predicting that everyone will have this life log system whereby your heartbeat, your brain waves, every conversation that you have with anyone is recorded and sent straight to a government database.
Now, this isn't Paul Watson or
Alex
Jones.
They weren't wrong.
This is mainstream.
Yes, they were.
Pentagon DARPA release a few weeks ago. Every breath, every heartbeat to be tracked by scanner cameras. And in Boston, Logan Airport, and four others, they put the MRI scanner that looks at your brain waves to see if you're aggressive or upset, and they need to come over and speak with you. Then they ask you questions under another brain scanner to see if you're lying.
This is a great example of how Alex is an idiot, and listening to him is stupid. He's saying that there are MRIs in the airport, and then reporting that it's some kind of a plan to detect aggression or nefarious intent in people. This is insane, but it's based on a kernel of truth, which is that MRI technology is used in airports. It's used to scan bags, because the idea of human application of MRI in an airport is laughable. If you've ever had an MRI done, you'll know that it's a complicated process where you're put into a big machine and then you have to stay completely still or else you'll ruin the pictures that the doctor is taking inside your head.
While the machine angrily yells at you.
Sometimes they have to give people like sedatives.
You have to go a bunch.
Yeah. Imagining that you could effectively use MRI technology on something not staying completely still is absurd, and it would pretty much be useless in a crowded airport terminal. One of the primary applications of MRI tech in the airport has to do with screening liquids, because that's something that X-rays are not traditionally very good with. Also, 19 years later, and Paul's 10-year prediction is looking shitty, because, yes,
it's not looking
there
great.
Are things like data that's collected.
Sure.
And, there are things about... concerns about things listening or what have you. Even though that may be true, that is a far cry from every conversation you have being recorded by some government database and every heartbeat that you have.
Right.
Like, all of this is like a system that is, first of all, would not be useful.
Exactly. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it. That we do know for a fact.
The evil folks would have no use for that. It would be too much.
It's too much information to find anything. Yeah. That's why the NSA's wide sweeping program, like when they start looking into how much use they get out of it, it's like, no, now your signal to noise ratio is all noise.
If you have everyone's heartbeat logged in something, I don't know
whose heartbeat are you listening to?
Right.
It's everyone.
And every single conversation and every breath.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway.
Is that just to check in on you, make sure you're okay?
Yeah. A lot of strong predictions coming out here.
Yeah.
And we're going to end this episode with, like I said, the 11th isn't, there's not much
A little
going
bit
on.
Of a wasteland.
But there's something that is fucking awesome. And it's a delightful note for this episode to end on. And take it away, PJW.
I recently saw an episode of the sitcom Frasier on British television, and the plot went like this. One of the brothers joined a gun club, and to all the other characters' surprise, he became friends with the other members of the club and began to see them regularly. And throughout the rest of the show, everyone was questioning his integrity about the fact that he was hanging out with, in their words, these wacko gun nut survivalists. But the most interesting aspect came at the very end of the show, where one of the brothers walked into the gun club and found all the other members crowded around something talking. And when he said, "Hey guys, what's that?" The other members came back and said, quote, "It's a machine we're building to defeat the New World Order." And then the plot went that the brother ran out of the gun club and the studio audience laughed hysterically, and that was basically the end of the show.
I'm begging everyone, total red alert.
No.
I absolutely must have that on video.
That's
total gold. Was that a new episode or an old one?
Oh, my God.
Well, it was on about 6 months ago, and obviously the repeat screen later here in Britain.
I got an old episode of Frasier to tell you about, Alex.
I can't think of anything dumber. To me personally, than the idea that you are going to pull up an old Frasier episode as proof of whatever argument you are making.
Yeah.
The end.
I would love Alex to watch that episode where they think the dog is depressed.
Yeah.
Because that one's a bummer. So, look, this is a great opportunity for me to go watch an episode of Frasier.
Sure, yeah.
I'm not going to turn
like
that
Frasier.
Down.
You love Frasier. Yeah. I don't.
It's
but
harder
it's
to watch now with Kelsey Grammer, but I put that aside and just enjoy
hey,
for what it is.
Listen, I don't mind watching X-Men. The dude's beast. It's fine.
Not a good beast. So the plot of this episode
is
that Niles goes to a shooting range with his dad because his dad was a former cop.
Right.
You know?
Gotcha. bullshit.
This is not an anti-gun show. The dad's a cop.
Yeah, there's a reason for a character-based reason
and so
for
Miles
the show.
Doesn't want to shoot, but he does, and he ends up liking it. And some the people who are at the booth next to him, like, oh, look at the kid. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're encouraging him. Sure. And he gets to enjoy it.
Yeah, he gets a little love bomb.
Right.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so he
yeah.
wants to go back to the shooting range.
Of course.
But his dad doesn't want to go because he's like, you know, I go about once a year. I've had enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Niles goes. He makes friends with these guys who are there.
Sure.
And they end up inviting him to a gun show. And so the dad and Daphne decide to go along.
Okay.
And so they go to the gun show, and Niles is just having a great time. And he's going to get an ankle holster, and Daphne's like, you don't have a gun. And so it's all a good time.
Sure, sure, sure.
Niles goes away for a minute, and the guys, the gun friends, come over, and they say something about the New World Order. And Daphne and the dad are like, These are militia types. These are weirdos. And so they tell Niles, like, hey, you don't want to hang out with these people. They're not your sort of people.
Right.
He's like, when I make intellectual friends, you don't like my friends. And now I make cool friends and you don't like my friends. And so he's like, I'm going to hang out with these guys and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, 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 right.
And so they've invited him to a compound in Idaho.
Ooh.
And so he walks over to them at the gun show.
Right.
And they're like around a piece of paper. And he's like, oh, what's this? He's like, oh, these are plans for the generator. We're going to need this when the New World Order comes. And he's like, oh, okay.
Oh, gotcha.
Yep.
Check, please.
And so he and the dad and Daphne leave.
Naturally. Gotcha.
So, yeah, there's a...
It's just an episode about how sometimes there are those militia types by a show that was famous for being famous in the 90s during when all those militia types were everywhere.
This actually was in season 10, so it was a little late on that. But yeah.
It was still recent.
Yeah, but I also think that, you know, fairly often, Frasier, one of the jokes is... their snobbiness.
Yeah.
They are the butt of the joke because they judge people too quickly.
Yeah.
Oftentimes.
Yeah.
Frasier and Niles are both, they have to deal with like our snooty presumptions about people are not right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that for sure that was what this episode was going to be, but
just militia types. Yep.
They want to overthrow the government.
Scary.
And Niles almost accidentally went to Idaho.
Boy, Niles should not go to Idaho.
Yeah.
That is one place that Niles should not be involved with.
Yeah, but it was a fun episode.
That is a fun episode.
Also, B plot.
Yeah.
Roz is getting a new job, and so she's going to stop being Frasier's producer.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's a big episode, honestly. That's an interesting B plot for that episode.
And Frasier's making out with Felicity Huffman. I don't know who her character is. I'd forgotten what she is on the show. Maybe she came in the later seasons or something. Yeah, but they're getting hot and heavy.
How long did Frasier run for?
Quite a while.
Wow.
Yeah, this is season 10.
Jesus, people used to just watch anything.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Frasier's fun.
Sure.
I don't know if it was just because I had been listening to InfoWars and I switched over to Frasier.
You were just like, I'm going
to
watch Frasier. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You made all your snobby friends and then mocked your cool friends. I get it. I see how it is.
So anyway, we come to the end of this.
Indeed.
And, you know, Alex, we got some interesting view into his childhood. Paul's book is out. But I think the most important thing to take away from this is the control of information that Alex has in order to tell his narratives and his stories the way he wants the audience to experience them.
Yeah.
He doesn't give access to the full picture because if he did, he would have a harder time telling the story that he wants to tell. And that's not the mark of somebody who's straight up.
Nope.
Because he's a liar.
Yeah. That'll do
it. That's basically the point I'm trying to get across.
I mean, there's one point there. The other point is that cult leaders are scary, man. Cult leaders are scary. Because that's the thing that I really could never get past. You know, that moment where somebody says to you, like, I've left my family and my friends behind. And you have to look them in the eyes and be like, that was a great move, sir.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, but what's really weird about it is the... someone saying I've left my family and friends behind is almost, that takes a little bit of strength.
That's a different,
kind of, to
yeah,
say
yeah.
It.
That's a different agency. This yeah, is somebody this saying is that all saying, my friends and family have left me
because I'm too right about
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a deluded person who's in a cult and doesn't realize.
True, true.
And that's even scarier, almost.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in a, they're, well, I mean, that's kind of funny. They're in a secret cult that is hidden from the rest of society, controlled by a small group of people in a nondescript studio in Austin.
Well, actually, this was in Round Rock. He was in John Stadtmiller's studio.
Ah, bastards.
Yeah, he was on the road broadcasting on this one.
I gotcha.
So your theory falls apart.
It does. It does fall apart. It's all done.
So, Jordan.
Yes, Dan.
We'll be back.
Indeed.
But until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Wilford Snibble Snabble of the Gribble Pibble.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.